Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Pei Aleph Omid Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Achal vishata behelem echad, he eats and drinks in one forgetting, inu chayav ela chatat achat. Then he's only chayav one chatat, because they derive from the same isur and the same transgression. Aval, if he achal besa malacha, if he eats and does malacha, which are both chiyuvei karet, then chayav shtei chataot. If he does that b'shogeg, he's going to be chayav two chataot, because they derive from different isurim. Achal uchlim she'inan ru'uin le'achila. If he eats food that is not edible, v'shatah mashkim she'inam ru'uim le'shti'ah, or he drinks water or liquid that is not potable, or here's more like an example, v'shatah tzir, if he drinks brine, omurios, or fish brine, patur. All of these are patur because they're not considered to be food items, drinks. Therefore, they do not count towards the violation of the restriction against achila v'shti'ah on Yom HaKippurim. Hamarish Lakish. Mipnei ma lo nemra azhara bi'inui. Why is there no azhara bi'inui? Meaning that we have the punishment, which is kol asher lo tu'uneh be'etzem hayom hazeh, whoever does not afflict themselves in the middle of this day, v'nichvata nefeshei mi'amah, then they get the punishment of karet. But we don't find any azhara, we don't find any warning that tells us that you must carry out the inui. It says the reason is because there's no way to phrase it. The problem is that inui is a requirement to do, which is you must afflict yourself. Now, if you're looking for an azhara, we have to formulate it in the negative. So the problem is here, you're trying to take a negative item that's phrased in the positive, which is inui, and now trying to create a negative, which is a lotase out of it, which like it says, we can't formulate it that way. Why? Heichi nichtov. What are you going to write? Nichtov rachmana lo yochal. If the Torah writes it in the formulation of achila, then we have a problem because achila b'kezayit. That was the whole reason the Torah didn't use the term achila and used the term inui, is to tell you that the threshold for Yom HaKippurim is kotevet agasa and not a kezayit. Nichtov rachmana lo te'uneh. If you say do not be mi'aneh, that's the exact opposite of what you want. Lo te'uneh means do not afflict yourself. So that means kum achol mashma. It sounds like you should be eating because you should not afflict yourself. So Reish Lakish says, because there's no way to formulate it, the Torah doesn't have an azhara with regards to inui. So Mati Lav Rav Ushaya, Nichtov Derachmana, Hishamer, Pen Loti Uneh. So he has a way to formulate it, which is if you create a double negative. If you create a double negative, then it becomes a positive. So he says, Hishamer Pen Loti Uneh. Be careful that you don't afflict yourself. So because of that, then you can create a lotase. It says, imkein nefishi lehu lave. The problem is then you create multiple lavin. Because we know the terms, there are certain terms in the Torah that are used to generate a lav. That is pen, al, lo, and hishamer. So now I have all three of these words found over here. How many azharot do I have here? So that was the problem. If you formulate it that way, you're multiplying the lavin that are associated with it. Matki b'lo rabbi b'barbayi. Nichtov rachmana hishamer b'mitzvat inui. I have a simple way to formulate it. Only has one lav. Is be careful with the mitzvah of inui. Where it says, imkein, you have a problem because hishamer d'lav, lav. Hishamer d'asei, asei. Hishamer is a flexible word. Hishamer, when used in the context of a positive commandment, is a positive commandment. When it is used in the context of a negative commandment, then it becomes a negative. So over here, the formulation is positive because it's Hishamer b'mitzvat inui. So you're using it as an assay, that means that the Hishamer will function as assay and not as a lota. So you won't get the azhara that you want. Like, for instance, you have, Rashi talks about Hishamer b'neget zarat. That means shelo yikotz b'harato, that you don't cut off the baharet. That's the Hishamer b'nega tzarat. So that's a lav, which says, don't do something. That Hishamer is considered to be an azhara. But over here, the Hishamer, which is associated with a positive statement, which is, do the inui, that Hishamer won't function as a lav, but rather as an assay. Truth is, it's a machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan believes that a Hishamer of an assay is also a lav. So Tosafot says, the Gemara could have said, well, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the Hishamer would work. This formulation would work. But who is the author of this sugya here? The first person right after the Mishnah is Amar Reish Lakish. It's Reish Lakish's sugya. So this is Reish Lakish the Shitato. Reish Lakish's Shitato is that Hishamer, when it's associated with a negative statement, is negative. It's associated with a positive statement, is positive. So according to Reish Lakish, you can't come up with a lotase for inui. So Gemara says, Mati Flo Ravashi Nichtov, Al Tasur Minha Inui. Why don't we read it this way? Do not step away from the inui. Al being one of the words that's used for a lav, and a tasur min ha-inui is fine. It's telling you don't step away or move away from the inui. So even though you have a negative statement about the inui, it's talking about keeping the inui, not rejecting the inui. And now we have a way to formulate the azhara. So when it says kasha, that would have been a good solution to the problem, and therefore it's a question on Reish Lakish's position that the reason there is no azhara in the Torah for inui is because it would have been impossible to formulate it. Now it's not easy, as you say, to formulate it, but there are ways to formulate it. And therefore, the question is, if there is no azhara, then how do we deal with inui and Yom HaKippurim? In order to punish, you need an azhara. The rules are that if you have an azhara by itself, that's a lav, and you get malkot for it, assuming it meets the requirements of a lav that gets malkot. If you have an onesh that's mentioned in the Torah, then we need an azhara. You need a warning that you should not do it. And then the onesh is, if you do this, this is the punishment. So we do have the punishment, which we know for a violation of inui. It's called a shelo tu'une, b'etzem ha'yom hazeh. If you don't do the inui, then you're held accountable for that, and you will be punished with karet. The question is, where is the azhara for this inui? Reish Lakish was trying to point out that it was impossible, but now we show, at least according to Rav Ashi, that it is possible to do it. So now, if it was possible to do it, we don't do it, where is it? Where is this azhara? Okay, so now the Gemara says, V'tana maiti la mahacha. We have a braita that learns out, where is the lotase, where is the azhara of inui? Because it says, Tanu et nafshotechem, that you must afflict yourselves, and then v'chol milacha lotasu. Now, we have quoted here in our Gemara, we have the Gemara quotes from us from Bemidbar, which is, V'nitim et nafshotechem v'chol milacha lotasu. We've mentioned this before, that there's that juxtaposition between inui and malacha. It's found twice. It's found once in Parshat Emor. It's also found in Parshat Pinchas. The Gemara here quotes from Parshat Pinchas. Sotah Shas points out that they should have quoted from Emor because it's earlier in the Torah. You have a choice of quotes. They teach you the same information. We always pick the earlier quote, so it should have come from Emor. The quote in Emor is, Tanu et nafshotechem v'chol malacha lo tasu, whereas the quote in our Gemara is from Parshat Pinchas. Right now, the Gemara says, okay, so we have this juxtaposition between Melacha and Inui. Yochu yehei anush autosefet Melacha. I would think that you would get a punishment for the extra time that involves Melacha. We'll explain this in 1 second. Tamalomar b'chol ha-nefesh asher teaseh ha-melacha be'etzem hayom hazeh. On this day, in the middle of this day. Al tzumosho yom anush karet, vein anush karet autosefet Melacha. There is a requirement that we're going to see later on in today's daf to be mosifim michol al hakodesh, to extend Yom HaKippurim beyond the boundaries of Yom Kippur, to start Yom HaKippurim early and to finish Yom HaKippurim late. So that's what we call tosefet Yom HaKippurim. I'll discuss it when we get there later in the daf. Here you have tosefet Yom HaKippurim. The Gemara wants to know, when you have that tosefet, is it under the same rules as the core day of Yom HaKippurim? In the core day of Yom HaKippurim, if you do malacha, you're chayav karet. Does that apply to the Tosefet Yom HaKippurim? So here the Braita tells you that's not the case. You would have thought that when you do the Tosefet, it has the same exact status as the day itself. Mara says no, because it says, V'chol nefesh asher taseh chol malacha be'etzem hayom hazeh, avadti et nefesh ahi mikarev amah. That punishment of karet only applies to itzumo shel yom, the day itself, not the Tosefet. Yochol lo yehei anush karet al tosefet melacha, ave yehei anush karet al tosefet inui. So fine, with regards to melacha, it's relegated to the day itself, not to the additions. What about inui? The inuyim also have the same requirement of tosefet. If you add on Yom HaKippurim, the inuyim start early, and they end later. And there's a requirement of tosefet Yom HaKippurim in that realm. So that Tosefet HaInui, does that have the same rules as the core day? Do you get karet if you violate the Inuim in the Tosefet Yom HaKippurim? Talmud Omar, Pasuk says, Ki kol ha-nefesh asher lo tu'une be'etzem ha-yom hazeh v'nichreta me'ameha. So you see here that it has the Itzumo stated by the Inui as well. Al Itzumo shayom anush karet, vein anush karet al Tosefet Inui. So on the day itself, there is an anush karet with regards to the Inui, but there is no anush karet on the Tosefet Inui. So both by Melacha and by the Inuim, you have the word Etzem Hayom Hazeh, which is mentioned both times in Parshat Emor. It mentions with regards to the Melacha, Lo Tosek Melacha Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. It says, Vad Inui Kol HaNefesh Lo Tu'une Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. So the fact that Etzem Hayom Hazeh is mentioned by both of these items teaches you that both the Inui and melacha are only punished by karet on the day itself, not on the Tosefet Yom HaKippurim. Yochol lo yeh bechlau onesh. You would think that they're not punishable. Aval yeh muzhar al Tosefet melacha. Okay, so the onesh, which says etzem hayom hazeh, so that only applies during the day. But you have a warning not to do melacha, lo taseh melacha. Maybe that hazara applies to Tosefet Yom HaKippurim. Tamal Omar, the pasuk says, v'chol melacha lo tasu be'etzem hayom hazeh. You may not do any melacha be'etzem hayom hazeh. Al yitzumosh hayom hu muzhar, ve'enu muzhar al Tosefet melacha. Both the punishment and the azhara have a qualifier called etzem hayom hazeh. Pashat Emor, it says, v'chol melacha lo tasu be'etzem hayom hazeh. So that's number one. Lo tusu melacha is modified by etzem hayom hazeh. Then when it comes to the punishment, it says, v'chol nefesh asher taseh kol melacha be'etzem hayom hazeh, v'vatiyah nefshi mikarav ama. So again, etzem hayom hazeh qualifies the punishment of melacha. So both with regards to the warning, the azhara, the lav that's associated with the melacha, and the punishment of melacha, it only applies to itzumosh yom, it only applies to Yom Kippur, core Yom Kippur, not to Tosefet Yom HaKippurim. So that we know by melacha. Now with regards to inui, yochol lo yehi muzhar al Tosefet melacha. Okay, there'll be no azhara for the Tosefet melacha, aval yehi muzhar al Tosefet inui. But you will be muzhar on the Tosefet inui. Vidinu, and that would be a kal v'chomer. Ma melacha shnohegit b'shabbatot v'yomim tovim. Milacha. It has restrictions not only in Yom Kippurim, but also in all the Shabbatot of the year and all the Yom Tovim. Enu muzhar leah. There's no extension of the azhara beyond the borders of the day of Yom Kippur, even though there's a requirement for Tosefet Yom Kippurim. Inui, she'enu noheg b'shabbatot v'yomim tovim. Inui, which does not apply except for Yom HaKippurim. It's relegated to Yom Kippur. It doesn't apply on any other day, any other Shabbat, Yom Tov. Enu din shloye muzhar leah. So then there'd be no reason to believe that there should be an azhara. So we've now come to the conclusion that by malacha, no azhara, no onesh beyond the borders of poor day of Yom Kippur, because it says etzem hayom hazeh by both of them. By inui, we know the punishment is relegated to the day itself, because it says etzem hayom hazeh with regards to the inui. The question is by the azhara of inui. Now, the truth is the azhara for inui doesn't exist. But, assuming there was an azhara for inui, would it apply beyond the borders of Yom Kippur? Gemara says, I command that a kal v'chomer from malacha. Malacha, which has broader application, is limited to Yom Kippur Kor, so to Inui, which only applies on Yom Kippur, should not extend beyond the borders of Yom HaKippurim. Now the Gemara wants to know, okay, Aval Azara Inui, Shayom Atzmo, Lo Lamadnu. Wait a minute, before we even get that far, where is the Azara for Inui at all? So Minayin, Lo Yamur Onesh b'melacha. Because it didn't need to tell you about an onesh by melacha. The gamar mi inui. We could have learned it out from the inui. Uma inui she'enu noheg b'shabbatot v'yomim tovim. The inui that doesn't apply by Shabbatot and Yomim Tovim. Anush karet. You get punished with karet. So inui, if you violate the inui of Yom Kippur, karet. Melacha shnoheget b'shabbatot v'yomim tovim. Lo kol shekein. Melacha, which applies in Shabbat and Yom Tov of all the year, then certainly you should get karet for that on Yom Kippur. So lama ne'amar. So then why does the Torah tell us the punishment for melacha on Yom Kippur is karet? We would have assumed that anyway, because we would have extrapolated from inui. So Gemara says mufne. That means that it is extraneous, allows us now to make a limud. Hakish v'ladun mimenu. Zera Shabbat. To make a hekesh between melacha and inui, to teach us. That gzera Shabbat. Nemar onesh b'inui. Nemar onesh b'melacha. Gives you the punishment of inui, and gives you the punishment of melacha. Ma melacha lo anash, elim ken hizir. Just like over there, by the melacha, the onesh is given, and so is the azhara. Afinui lo anash, elim ken hizir. So to over here, we're going to assume that that parallel extends, that just like the punishments of melacha and inui are parallel, so too their azharot will be parallel. So even though there's really no azhara for inui, we will extrapolate it from the azhara of melacha. So the azhara of melacha will apply to the azhara of inui. And that's how we'll know that there is an azhara by inui that would also limit the ability of the azhara of inui to extend beyond the borders of Yom HaKippurim. Because the source for your azhara and inui is melacha. So just like the azhara of melacha is limited to Yom Kippur itself, so too the azhara of inui will be limited to Yom Kippur itself. This all derives from the fact that you can make a gzeirah shava between melacha and inui to tell you that they have the same din. And the reason is because the punishment for melacha is extraneous, wasn't necessary, because you would have extrapolated that from inui. The fact that it writes both of them tells you that it's trying to teach you something. What is it teaching you? To get the azhara for inui from melacha. I said zika lemifrach. That's not a good logical argument. Mali inui shlohutar michlalo. Inui has no heter. There are no exceptions to the rule. Inui applies, of course, unless there's sakanat nefashot or bikuach nefesh. But otherwise, inui applies on Yom Kippur, and there are no waivers. There are no waivers for the inuim on Yom Kippur. Tomar b'melacha shutra michlala. It's not true by melacha. The melacha on Yom Kippur, the melacha on any of the Shabbatot, the Yom Tovim of the year, is waived with regards to avodah in the Mikdash. Avodah in the Mikdash is performed on Shabbat and on Yom Tov and on Yom Kippur, despite the fact that there's a restriction against doing melacha. So you have a hutar michlalo with regards to melacha, and you do not have that by inui. That means that there is a kula by melacha. Once there's a kula by melacha, you can't make the statement made before. The statement made before is, well, if you get karet for inui, you certainly get karet for Yom Kippurim, because inui only applies to Yom Kippur. Melacha applies to all the holidays, Shabbat, Yom Tov, Yom Kippur, and therefore for sure you would get the punishment karet. Mar says that's not true, because you have a kula in melacha, which is inui you get karet, but maybe by melacha you shouldn't get karet, because inui has no exceptions to the rule. There are no dispensations. Melacha has exceptions to the rule, so maybe it's a lighter form. The fact that there are exceptions to the rule, that tells you that melacha can't be that severe because we allow for exceptions. There are no exceptions to inui in the Mikdash. There are only exceptions of melacha. Alright, so what you're pointing out is very true here, which is that the rule, or what the Gemara is saying here about inui has no exceptions, is about achila and shtia. With regards to the other three inuim, we've already gotten a list of exceptions to those rules. So either those are derabanan, or even if you believe they're d'oraita, they're not on the same level as achila and shtia, which are considered to be explicit. So the Gemara here says that lohu utar michlala, it's clearly only focusing on achila and shtia, which are the primary inuim that are associated with Yom HaKippurim. So now the Gemara says, elalo yomar onish b'inui. Let's do it the other way around. Let's say that the Torah doesn't have to tell us about the punishment of karet with inui, d'gamar mi'malacha. We're learning out of melacha. Ma melacha shutra michlala. Melacha that has dispensations, and yet anush karet, it still gets the punishment of karet. Inui shelo hitar michlalo. Inui that has no exceptions to the rule. Lo kol shekein. Then certainly it should be a chiyuv karet. So lama ne'amar. So why did the Torah have to bother to tell us the punishment? We could have learned it from melacha. So mufne, again, it's extraneous. If that's extraneous, lakish ladun mimenu gzer shava. Come to teach you that you can make a gzeirah shavah between melacha and inui. Nemar onesh b'inui. Nemar onesh b'melacha. There's punishment by inui. There's a punishment by melacha. Ma melacha anash v'izir. Just like melacha, it punished and there's nazara. Af inui anash v'izir. So to by inui, it has a punishment and v'izir, there'll be an nazara. Gemara says, wait a minute, ikal mifrach. You can ruin this kavachomer from the premise of the previous kavachomer, which was, Ma melacha shekeinu hege b'shabbatot v'yamim tovim. Melacha applies to all the holidays of the year, not just Yom Kippur. Tamar b'inui shekeinu hege b'shabbatot v'yamim tovim. And you got to have that inui, which only applies to Yom HaKippurim. So this is a style of the Braita. The style of the Braita is to go back and forth. The truth is, it just is telling you, is that you can't learn inui and melacha one from the other. Each one of them has its tzad chumrah and its tzad hula. Once you do that, it's very hard to learn one from the other. If you have something that's always kal and always chamur, then you can create a kal v'chomer. Without that, you run into a problem with kal v'chomer because you don't know which one is more chamur. You don't know which one to weigh more heavily. So over here, the malacha has the kula of being hutar michlala, that it has exceptions to the rule, it has dispensations. It has the chumrah that it applies not only to Yom Kippur, but to all the holidays and Shabbatot of the year. Inui has a chumrah, which is lo hutar michlala, there are no exceptions, no dispensations. And then it has a kula that it's relegated just to Yom Kippur, it applies nowhere else. So because of that, I can't learn one from the other. The truth is, the Gemara could have answered differently, which is, we have a principle that the Gemara in Makot lays out, which is, ein onshin min adin. You're not allowed to give a punishment through a limud of a kal v'chomer. We have a kal v'chomer being used for certain limudim. The exception to that is onshin. You're not allowed to extrapolate punishments, one from the other, through logical arguments, through a kal v'chomer. So it's called, ein onshin min adin. There are also some who believe, in musarim min adin. You can't even create lavin through the din, through kal v'chomer. But most people believe that you can't be onshim in a din. So either this Gemara didn't bother to answer it because they had a better answer, which is that the kal v'chomer doesn't even exist to start with, or this Gemara is according to the opinion who says onshim min a din, that you are able to punish based on the kal v'chomer, and therefore the Gemara continued, assuming that that was plausible or possible. But now we've come to the conclusion that we can't learn one from the other, and now we're back to square one with regards to the azhara for inui, which is we don't know where the azhara for inui comes from. What we have learned and what we have concluded is that with regards to malacha, the azhara and the punishment are limited to Yom Kippur itself, and for the inui, we know that the punishment is limited to Yom Kippur itself. Depending where we learn the azhara from, that will have implications about how wide or broad the Azhara of Inuyis. Now, Amarov Vina Haitana Etzem Etzem Gamar. He says that he learns out Gzeir Shav of Etzem, just like it says Etzem Ayom Azeh by the Malacha. It also says Etzem Ayom Azeh by the Inuy. So we create a Gzeir Shav, and that's how we learn the Azhara for Inuy. Gemar says, Mufne. You better have one of these be extraneous, because otherwise, Di Lo Mufne, Ikon Mifrak Yed Barachinan. Because otherwise, you can ruin this Gzeir Shav. Gzeirah Shavah does not have a logical connection because of the problem of Kula and Chumrah that we just showed before. So then, Gzeirah Shavah, that is just two words that we say, okay, we can learn one from the other, that has to meet logical requirements. Once you say it's Mufneh, once you say the word is extraneous in the Torah, that tells us that that word was delegated or delineated specifically for a limud. Once you do that, you can override logic, and logic is no longer a issue. Now, there is a machloket as whether you need mufne mitzad achad or mufne mitzne tzadim. Do you have to have the word be extraneous in both sides of the limud or only one side of the limud? But assuming that only on one side of the limud it's extraneous, then we can override logic, and logic no longer is a impediment to making the limud. So that's what the Gemara says here. This limud of etzem etzem better be mufne, because on a logical basis you can't make the gezeirah shavah. So that would mean that you need to have one of the two etzem ayom azez be extraneous. And that's what the Gemara asks now. Lai ifnui mufne. So it says, where is it mufne? How do you have this extra or extraneous etzem ayom azez? Because michte, let us take a look here. Hamisha krai ktive memalacha. Five times is the Isur Malacha mentioned. So why is it mentioned five times? Chad azara de yomama. I want to tell you that you're not allowed to do malacha during the day. Chad azara de lelia. I want to tell you you're not allowed to do work the night before. Chad li onish de yomama. One for the punishment during the day. Vechad onish de lelia. I want to tell you that there's a punishment for doing malacha at night. Vechad the ifnuye, the migmar inui malacha. So one of them is left open to tell you that imanu lacha ben diyomama ben delaylo. So one of them is left over to give you a gzeirah shavah, to teach you the azhara of inui from melacha, but that will take over both azharot by melacha, which is the azhara at night and the azhara during the day, and that will have equal application by inui. So here we have in the parsha of Emor, it says v'chol melacha lo tasu be'etzem hayom hazeh ki yom kipurim hu lechaver lechem ifnei Hashem elokeichem. That's azhara of the yom, because it says be'etzem hayom hazeh. Then v'chol nefesh asher tasem melacha be'etzem hayom hazeh v'vatei nefshei mikerev ama. So that's the next one, which is that's the onesh for be'etzem hayom hazeh, for the daytime. Then afterwards it says kol melacha lo tasu hugat olam l'dor techem v'chol mishvotechem. Now I have a additional restriction against doing melacha. That additional restriction will tell me even at night that there is a lo tasei of doing melacha. And then back in Pashat Achrimot, in the beginning of Achrimot, you have another mention of Melacha, which is Vaital Achem Mechugat Olam B'chol Shashvi B'Sod HaChodesh Tanu Nafshirutichem B'chol Melacha Lo Tosu Ezrach V'Agir Agar B'Tocham. So now we have an additional Azhara of Melacha. So now we had three in Pashat Emor. We have one in Pashat Achrimot. Then you have one in Pashat Pinchas. B'Sod HaChodesh Shashvi Azem Mikra Kodesh Yelachem Nitem Et Nafshirutichem. So now I have five times that the lotasem melacha is mentioned. Truthfully, four of them are the lotasem, one of them is the onesh. So the Gemara says, why do I need so many of them? The Gemara says, okay, one of them teaches me you may not do melacha azhara during the day of Yom Kippur. One of them is to tell me that there's an azhara against melacha at night. One of them to teach me that you get punished for doing melacha on Yom Kippur itself on the day. Next one to teach me that you get punished for melacha at night. One, that's extraneous. The one that's extraneous, what does that do for me? That gets lifted. So therefore I have that extraneous aspect of it, and therefore I can learn this gzeir shava of etzim etzim, and through that I can now learn the azara for inui. What your question is, why does here all of a sudden the Gemara have to make it day and night? Because it says in Parshat Emor, be'etzem ayom hazeh. So you would have thought be'etzem ayom hazeh would have limited the restriction to daytime. So that's why it needs an extra lota, say, to bring it over to the nighttime. Because of the qualifier, be'etzem ayom hazeh. If you just said, v'chol melacha lo tasu, you would assume it applies to the entire day. The only time we have these, we have it by the Gemara, we'll see this in Sukkah and other places, is whenever it uses the term yom or yamim, then the Gemara says, okay, well, yom or yamim, maybe that only means during the daytime, maybe it doesn't apply at night. Because we have certain mitzvot like that, for instance, the taking of lulav, which only applies during the day. So when we say, v'lakach lechem b'yom harishon, we literally means yom means during the daytime. So the word yom or yamim can have two meanings. Yom or yamim can mean day as in the sense of day versus night, but it also can mean day in the sense of a 24-hour period. You have to look in the context. Over here, because it says betzem ayom hazeh, the Gemara is saying maybe you would have thought etzem ayom hazeh literally means daytime and not day as the whole 24-hour period. Because of that, I need the additional lotus to bring it to the nighttime. But once I've done that, then obviously it means that it applies to everything. And that extraneous lotus emelacha allows me now to have an azhara for inui. To be Rabbi Shmuel Tana, nemer kan inui, nemer lahalan inui. Malala no anash, alim ken he's here. Afkan no anash, alim ken he's here. The term inui is used both by Yom HaKippurim, but it's also used in Sefer Devarim with Devar Shein Inat Eshet Re'ehu. When a person commits adultery, in the case of Na'ara HaMiruasa, then it says there that he's punished because of davar she'inat eshet re'ehu, because he afflicted, he did something wrong to his friend's wife. So the term inui is used over there. With regards to adultery, in that instance, there is an azhara, don't do it, and it's also known as a punishment for doing it. So the Gemara says, just like by the inui of adultery, it has an azhara and an onish, so too the inui that's used by Yom HaKippurim has the same din. We'll learn out inui from inui, and therefore we'll have the azhara through that limud. By Yom HaKippurim, it says that it is a Shabbat Shabbaton, and that we'll learn out from Shabbat Breshit. Malala no'anash shimkeni is here. Just like by Shabbat Breshit, meaning the core Shabbat, there's an azhara and a punishment. So to over here, I've got no'anash shimkeni, he's here. Interesting over here is in the side here, in the Mesodah Shas, he says, Kol HaShabbatot Kuriin Shabbat Breshit. Shum D'chol Ma'adot Namik Tiben Shabbat Shabbaton. By all the holidays, it says Shabbat Shabbaton. Hilka Akari Le Shabbat Breshit. Shemukdeshir Ubami Shesh Yimei Breshit. So that's why it calls it Shabbat Breshit, because otherwise you wouldn't know that Shabbat refers to Shabbat, like we're talking about, but rather Shabbat could refer to the Mo'adot. This has big implications, because the Pasuk in Parshat Emor that says, Umimacharada Shabbat Hashmi'it, that tells you when you count the Omer, you do it Mimacharada Shabbat, from the day after Shabbat. What is the definition of that word Shabbat? Stukim said that that Shabbat literally means Shabbat Breshit. So now, the Bach is pointing out that the word Shabbat has a much broader meaning. The word Shabbat doesn't always mean Shabbat Breshit, it also means the Moadot. So that's why the Gemara went out of its way to say Shabbat Breshit over here, to make you understand that Shabbat Breshit is what we're referencing, not the Moadot. Alright, Rav Papa Amar, who gufe Shabbat ikre. Yom HaKippurim itself is called Shabbat, because it says, Tishpitu Shabbatchem. Comes from the pasuk which is, Shabbat Shabbaton Ulechem, Nitim Enafshutechem, B'tishad HaChodesh Be'erev, Be'erev Ad'Erev, Tishpitu Shabbatchem. So that Tishpitu Shabbatchem is Rav Papa's source. So now, as Rashi points out, wait a minute, why is Rav Papa bringing his reason from Tishpedu Shabbatchem if we just said that by Yom Kippur, right, Shabbat, Shabbaton? Why is that enough to say that it's called Shabbat? The fact that it's called Shabbat, why doesn't that tell you the information from Shabbat, Shabbaton? Why does he go for a different pasuk, which is Tishpedu Shabbatchem? So Rashi points out that the Shabbat, Shabbaton is written in context of the Inui, or because earlier in the parak, we learn out Shabbaton to teach you Shvot, desist from the Inuim, because it's juxtaposed to the Inuim. Or, number three is, it says, Shabbat, Shabbaton. He says it has to do with Menucha, with the resting on that day. But Yom Kippur itself is not called Shabbat. So Rashi says that you have all these other ways to interpret Shabbat Shabbaton as not referencing the day itself, but rather either requirements of the day or the demand for menucha on the day. Because it says Shabbat Shabbaton Hilachem, which is describing the nature of the day. It should be a day of rest, not that Yom Kippur is described as a Shabbat. So because of those reasons, you can't use Shabbat Shabbaton to tell me that the day is described as a Shabbat. So he goes for the additional reasoning, which is Tishpetu Shabbatchem. And in Tishpetu Shabbatchem, that is defining the day as a Shabbat. And once you define the day as a Shabbat, then, just like Shabbat has an Azara and an Onish, so too over here. So what you have in the end here is we have four different ways to possibly learn out the Azara for Yom HaKippurim. The first one is that we learn it out from Etzem Etzem. We learn it out from the Gzeirah Shavah of Etzem Etzem HaYom HaZeh. And that is mufne because we had the additional lo tasek ha-melacha, we had the additional lav that is associated with the melacha that gave us that opportunity to learn it. The second possibility is we learn it out from inui, inui, the inui by adultery to the inui by Yom HaKippurim. The third possibility is that we learn it out from Shabbat Shabbaton. We learn out from Shabbat Breshit because it says Shabbat Shabbaton by both of them. So therefore, we learn out the din from there. And then the fourth one is Rav Papa's, which is Tishbutu Shabbatchem, that Yom Kippur itself is defined as a Shabbat. So even though, again, by Yom Kippur we have Shabbat Shabbaton he and Shabbat Shabbaton who, it has both formulations, Rashi says that it can be referring to menucha, which can be formulated in the male or the female. And therefore, it's either can mean mirgoa or menucha, whatever the definition is, but it's defining the character of the day, not the day itself. And that's why Rav Papa uses Tishbetu Shabbatchem. So those are the four possibilities of how we learn out the Azhara for Inui with regards to Yom HaKippurim. Now the Gemara says, Bishma Rav Papa lo amak Rav Acha bar Yaakov. Rav Papa doesn't say like Rav Acha bar Yaakov, who says we learn it out from Shabbat Shabbaton. Rather, he learns it out from Tishbetu Shabbatchem because he says, Dichtei begufei adif. If you write Shabbat in the day itself, in Yom Kippur itself, that's a better way to learn it than to say, oh, it's like Shabbat because of Shabbat Shabbaton. Rather here, he's saying it is called a Shabbat. Ella, Rav Acha bar Yaakov, my time alo amak Rav Papa. Why didn't Rav Acha bar Yaakov learn like Rav Papa? Because he says, mi bayileh tanyo, he needs it for this brayta. The brayta is, v'nitim enafshol techem b'tisha l'chodesh, that you should afflict yourself on the ninth day, ba'erev, mi erev, at Erev to Shubu Shabbatchem. Yocho Yatchil Yitene B'tisha. You think you'd have to begin to fast on the night. Tamalomer by Erev. You only do it at night. Iba Erev Yocho Mishatech Shach. If it's at night, you would think only when it falls dark. Tamalomer B'tisha on the ninth. Har Ketzad. How does that work? Matchil U'mitane Mibod Yom. You have to begin the fast while it's still day. Mikan Shemosifim Michol Alakodesh. This is the source for extending the day of Yom Kippur beyond its boundaries. Because it says, Zebetisha v'chodesh. Now, vein li'ela b'knisato. That's when you're entering the day. B'yitziyato minayin. How do you know on the outside you have to also add on to the day? Tamalomar mi'erev ad erev. From beginning to end. So just like in the beginning you have to add on, so too at the end you have to add on. So there's a requirement from here of Tosefet Yom HaKippurim, both on the onset of Yom Kippur, you have to bring it in before it actually comes in, as well as on the exiting of Yom Kippur. At the end of Yom Kippur, you have to extend the end of Yom Kippur. Ve'ein li ela Yom HaKippurim. That's only true by Yom Kippur. Shabbatot minayin. How do I know that it also applies to Shabbatot? Tamal Omar. Tishbetu. Ein li ela Shabbatot. I only know about Shabbatot. Yomim tovim minayin. How do I know Yomim tovim also? Tamal Omar. Shabbatchem. HaKeitzad. So what do I learn from this? Kol makom shenemar shvot. Then mosifim michol ala kodesh. Anywhere it says Shabbat, Shvot, and that is a desisting of Malacha, for mosif michol ala kodesh. So therefore there's a requirement of Tosefet Yom HaKippurim, Tosefet Shabbat, Tosefet Yom Tov, that derives from this pasuk over here. Now, there is a question as to whether this is the Oraita or the Rabbanan. Most of the Rishonim believe that Tosefet Yom HaKippurim and all these Tosafot are actually the Oraita and not the Rabbanan, based on the fact that they darshan it here from a pasuk. But there are those still that believe that it is the Rabbanan. Whether it applies beyond Yom Kippur is also machlokes Rishonim. The Rambam, in quoting the Halacha, only quotes Tosefet with regards to Yom HaKippurim and the Inuim of Yom HaKippurim. So the Rambam clearly views that the din of Tosefet only has an application to Inuim, not to anything else. Therefore, the Rambam relegates it to Yom Kippur and says that Tosefta does not apply beyond that. In Perish HaMishnah note, he does something interesting. He says it applies to Tisha B'Av as well. That would make sense, because you have Inuim on Tisha B'Av. But in Mishnah Torah, he does not mention that. He only mentions it by Yom Kippurim. Almost all the Rishonim, the Shulchan Aruch, everyone paskins that it applies not only to Yom Kippur, but applies to Shabbat and Yom Tov, that there is a requirement of Tosefet Shabbat and Tosefet Yom Kippurim. We're going to bump into the sugi again in Rosh Hashanah, so we'll delve into it more in detail over there, as to the question of how much is considered Tosefet Shabbat Yom Tov. Now, it's not a koshu. Everybody agrees it's not a koshu. But how much more is it? Is it double minutes? Or is it more extensive? Generally, our practice in terms of Tosefet beforehand is to add on 18 or 20 minutes prior. And that is because of the Shita to your aim. The Shita to your aim is that Shkia, sunset, is really 18 minutes before, or so before the Shkia that we think, when the sun really sets. And therefore, in order to incorporate his Shita, we move the Tosefet up so that at least you're getting Tosefet on all Shitot, and you're before all Shitot in terms of the onset of Shabbat. But in terms of most of the opinions is that you have to give a couple minutes beforehand if you add on, and a couple minutes at the end, you end up with Tosefet Shabbat and Yom Tov, or Tosefet Yom HaKippurim. What's the status of that Tosefet? That's very good. That is a big chakira as to whether when you add on that time, are you really extending the day of Shabbat? Are you extending the day of Yom Tov? Are you extending the day of Yom Kippur? Or are you simply accepting the positive commandments that can be positive and negative commands, but done at that time? You're not actually extending the day. That has big nafkaminot in terms of certain requirements, for instance, that require that you do something either before or after Shkia. So for instance, a woman who has to go to the mikveh on Friday night. If you accept Shabbat early, does that already make it Friday night, and therefore she's entitled to go to the mikveh before sunset? But she still have to wait for sunset on Friday night, because mikveh is determined by sunset, not by the fact that you made Shabbat early. That will be a nafkamina based on whether you think when you bring in Shabbat early, you're really changing Friday into Shabbat. The Taz has a shita like that. On the other hand, if you think simply you're extending the restrictions of Shabbat to beforehand, then you haven't changed it from Friday. It's still Friday. It's Friday with restrictions of Shabbat on it. So that's one nafkamina. The other nafkamina will be whether can you be yotzei the mitzvot of, for instance, Suda on Shabbat, if you do it prior to the Zman that it is nightfall. If you say that Friday becomes Shabbat, then no question that you can do the mitzvot, positive commandments of Shabbat. If you're just saying that the restrictions of Shabbat apply on Friday, then maybe you cannot do the positive commandments beforehand. Another nafkamina is, can you ask another Jew to do malacha for you? So on Shabbat itself, you can't even ask a goy to do malacha. Forget about a Jew to do malacha. But if you create Tosefet Shabbat and you accept Shabbat early, and another Jew has yet to accept Shabbat, you can ask him to do a melacha for you during that period of time. Because that restriction of Amira Le'akum, either because it's Amira Le'akum doesn't apply to a Jew, or because during Tosefet Shabbat those restrictions don't apply, and therefore you can ask a Jew to do you for you a melacha. So if you forgot something after you lit the candles and accepted Shabbat, and it's still prior to Shabbat, and someone else hasn't accepted Shabbat, you can ask them to do melacha on your behalf. So those are nafkaminot for the question of the nature of the Tosefet Shabbat. B'tana de etzem etzem, according to the Tana who learns out the gezer shavar of etzem etzem, hai betisha da chodesh mayovitai. What does he do with this pasuk that we just quoted that added on Tosefet Shabbat? The reason the Gemara is asking this question is before in the Braita that we had a connection between inui and melacha, that Tana says, minayin, how do I know that the punishments and the azarot of Yom Kippur only apply to the day itself and not to Tosefet, which means that that Tana believed that Tosefet was a given. He didn't need any pasuk to teach him that information. It was a given that there was Tosefet. And only because it says Etzem Hayom Hazeh does he say it's limited to Yom Kippur itself, the punishments and the azarot. Had it not been for the word Etzem Hayom Hazeh, he would assume that it expanded beyond the borders of Yom Kippur, and he doesn't need the pasuk of Me'erev Ad Erev Tishpatu Shavat Chem. So what does he do with that pasuk? He'll use it for this other braita. It says that you should afflict yourselves on the ninth. Is it true that on the ninth that you fast? Don't you fast? Don't you afflict yourselves on the tenth? The first famous memra. Anybody who eats and drinks on the ninth. As if he fasted both the ninth and the tenth. From here we have the mitzvah to eat and to enjoy oneself on Erev Yom HaKippurim. Rashi over here says, what's the reason that you should eat on the 9th? Before you go into Yom Kippur on the 10th, Rashi says, Klamar, hatkeinat smacha b'shtisha. Prepare yourself on the 9th, shetuchal litanot basara, so that you should be able to fast on the 10th. So it's really a hechsher mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah in itself to eat. The eating is a facilitator to allow you to fast on the 10th. The Rashi says, that's what the Torah is telling you. Eat well on the 9th. Do all the things you need to do on the 9th so you can do what you're supposed to do on the 10th, which is fast. So that's the way Rashi learns this. The Shiboli Alekid, on the other hand, says that no, it's a part of the mitzvah of Inui on Yom HaKippurim. Because the more you eat on the 9th, the harder the fast will be on the 10th. Because going from eating a lot to eating nothing, the stomach expands, and then it's much hungrier the next day. If you eat smaller amounts each day, then fasting is easier because the stomach shrinks, and it's less difficult to fast. So the eating on the 9th is actually a facilitator of more inui on the 10th. So you eat on the 9th in order to accomplish the inui on the 10th. So that's the way the Shiboli Alekut looks at this relationship. And then the tour brings that the reason why we make a suda on the 9th is the same reason that we wear nice clothing going into Yom Kippurim and we dress in white, because we are confident that Hashem will bring us slicha v'kapara in Yom Kippurim. So the suda on the 9th is a suda of anticipation of the excitement that Hashem will forgive us for our sins on Yom HaKippurim. The Rabbeinu Yonah in the Shari Tshuva brings that reasoning of the Torah, but also brings another reason for eating on the 9th, which is also well known, which is because Yom HaKippurim is a Yom Tov, but it's missing parts of the trappings of Yom Tov. And that is, on a Yom Tov, one of the central things is Suda. So since you can't have Suda on Yom HaKippurim, therefore, we move the Suda earlier on the 9th. And the Suda of the 9th is really Suda to Yom HaKippurim. It's the accomplishment of Suda Yom Tov for Yom Kippur, which can't be done on Yom Kippur itself. Therefore, it's moved over to the 9th. And actually, this has reflection or manifestations in the comparison that's brought by the Gra and that the Pachad Yitzchak of Hudner loves to speak about, which is Yom Kippurim is Yom Kippurim. It's similar to the day of Purim. By Yom Kippur, you have a day that is devoid of Suda. So therefore, you have to have the Suda on the 9th to make up for what's missing on the 10th. Purim is the other way around. Purim is all Suda. Purim is everything and is missing the trappings of quote-unquote Yom Kippur, but the other side of a Yom Tov, which is the more serious side, the focus on Tefillah and Limud HaTorah. And therefore, by Purim, we have Tanit, Esther, which precedes Purim. So the Tanit functions as the other half of the Yom Tov that will not appear on Purim itself, because Purim is missing that aspect of Yom Tov. So in both cases, we've pulled apart the two aspects of Yom Tov, Tefillah and Torah, and Suda. By Yom Kippur, the main theme of the day is Tefillah and Torah, and therefore the Suda is on the previous day. On Purim, it's the other way around. The main theme of the day is the Suda and the Oneg and the enjoyment, and therefore, what's pulled out as missing is the Tefillah and Torah, and that is placed on Tanit Esther, which is the day before. This connection between the 9th and 10th might also have nafkaminot with the gabe women. Because women are chayavot in all the mitzvot of Yom HaKippurim, are they also chayavot on the mitzvot of the 9th? So that is a question. It's a question of what you're doing on the 9th and its relationship to the 10th. If what you're doing on the 9th is connected to the 10th, just like they're chayavot in the mitzvot of the 10th, so too they'd be chayavot in the mitzvot of the 9th. For that reason, it's likely that women are chayavot in all the mitzvot of the 9th and the suda of the 9th and eating on the 9th, because they're also chayavot on the 10th. All right, now we continue in the Gemara. Achal uchlim shein ruim la'achila. If he eats items that are not edible, or not food, then he's not chayav on Yom HaKippurim. Amar Rava. Kas pilpilei, if he chews on peppers, b'yom HaKippurim, patur. Kas zangvilo, if he chews on ginger, b'yom HaKippurim, patur. So if he chews on, whether it's peppers or ginger, these aren't normal things that people eat, and therefore if he chews on them on Yom HaKippurim, he's patur, because those aren't considered to be ochel. Meitavei, is that really true? Yeah, Rabbi Meir Omer, mimashma shenemar, but it says by orla, ve'areltem orlato etz piryo. You have to leave the fruits of the trees in the first 3 years to be orla. Enu de'esh etz machalhu. Of course, if you're talking about fruits, we're talking about a fruit tree. Ela matam ulomar etz ma'achal. Why does it tell you afterwards that you're talking about a fruit-producing tree? If you're talking about fruit, of course the tree is a fruit-producing tree. So if I just said eitz, why does it have to tell you it's an eitz machal? So it comes to teach you eitz shetam eitzo pirio shaveh. It comes to teach you about a tree whose wood has the same taste as its fruit, and that has a requirement of orla, meaning that's classified as a tree and not as a vegetable. Haviyomer ze pilpilin. That refers to peppers. To tell you that peppers are chayav in orla, and it's Eretz Yisrael chaserek lum. And Eretz Yisrael is not missing anything. Shinemar, lotechsar kol ba. There's nothing missing in it because you have these types of trees. Now here, when we're talking about the peppers here, we're not talking about green peppers, red peppers. We're talking about the peppercorns that grow on the tree. So now we have a stira. Over here it says when you chew on those peppers, it's not considered to be ochel. It's not a problem for Yom Kippur. But now we have a limud by Orla that says that it's considered to be a fruit, and it's chayav in Orla, which means that it is an ochel. So how do I reconcile between them? Lokasha abritivta abiyavishta. Depends if it's moist or if it's dried out. When it's still in a state that it's moist, it's considered to be a fruit, and therefore it's edible, and you would have a requirement of Orla. Once it dries out, then it becomes a pepper, and that peppercorn is not edible by itself. It's used to spice other things, but it itself is not eaten plain. And so because of that, it's not considered to be ochel anymore. So therefore, by Yom Kippurim, we're talking about dried peppercorns. By Orla, we're talking about the moist when it's still in its fruit state. So I'm going to Ravina of the Mreimar, Amar of Nachman, Hayim Loto, the Ati Mibehun De'ai, Sharia, Umavrechin Aleya, Bore Peri Adama. That preserved ginger that comes from India, Sharia, you're allowed to eat it. Umivarchin alei borei pri adama. And the bracha that you make on it is borei pri adama. So it's not a problem of bishul akum. And it's not a problem that they're going to mix something improper in it. So that's number one. Number two is that it has a bracha of borei pri adama, which means that it's an ochel, and it can be eaten. We just said before, if you chew on ginger on Yom Kippur, that's not considered to be achila. Over here, and we're saying that it's a vegetable, and you make a borei pri adama on it. My answer is the same way again. Logasha abritivta abiyaveshta. When it's moist, when it's still ginger in its original state, that is edible. That's considered to be a vegetable, and you make a borei pri adama on it. Once it's been dried out, then it's being used as a spice, and it's no longer edible by itself. It's utilized to spice other items. Now, Tosafot over here takes up an issue, and it has important ramifications in terms of Trumot and Masrot, today in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara all over Shas has different opinions with regards to peppers, these peppercorns. Sometimes it says it's chayav, it's considered to be an ochel. Sometimes it says it's not, and that's even in the dried out state. It has this difference of opinion throughout Shas. And Tosafot wants to reconcile all these differences, and therefore he comes up with a principle here which has important ramifications. He says, any item that is utilized as a spice, but is also a vegetable in and of itself, those items are chayav and shumot and masrot, and are considered to be ochel and vegetables. The examples that he gives are, for instance, onions, garlic. These are items that are eaten by themselves, but are also used as spices. So in those instances, everybody agrees that those are chayav and shumot and masrot, and that they have a status of a vegetable, and then you have to make a bracha on them if you eat them by themselves. On the other hand, there are certain items that are only utilized as spices. They're not eaten by themselves. They would never be eaten in their state. They're only used to spice something else, to give flavor to something else. In that instance, he says, number one, they're not chayav in shumot in ma'asrot. And number two is they don't have a din of ochel. There is a middle category of items where if you mix them with water, you put them to other items, they take on a consistency. And that consistency may make it that they are eaten, plain in that way. In that instance, what is the din? So Tosafot here gives two ways to differentiate between the different opinions in Shas. The nafkamina between those two reasons is exactly this. You mix the spice together with water and you can make it into something that is a spread of sorts, or it can be utilized as a dip. In that case, are you chayav in shumot to masrot? So that turns out to be a safek. And generally our approach in that case is that it's a safek to chumra. Even though we're dealing with the din derabanan today in shumot to masrot, we are generally makpid to take off shumot and masrot in those cases. As far as Lipsak Halacha, the Chazanish, and many others paskin, that if it's a spice that is only utilized as a spice and not eaten alone, then you don't have to take off Trumot or Masrot, including teas and herbal teas. But Rav Mordechai Eliyahu argues with regards to teas, and he says that the main ingredient in the tea is the herb that's put in there. You're not drinking it for the water, you're drinking it for the flavor. The flavor is the ikar. And therefore he thinks that you have to take off Trumot and Masrot in that case, although most of the poskim paskin against Rav Mordechai Eliyahu. And again, since we're dealing with the Safek Derabanan, we will be makil in general in these cases not to take off Trumot Umasrot. But you should be aware that certain things like mint leaves, which are used for flavor, but are also eaten by people as plain as mint leaves. They're put into salads, they're eaten as mint leaves. In those cases, you would require Trumot Umasrot to be taken off of them because they're eaten in other contexts. Same thing with basil, which is used and made into pesto. So since it's used as a pesto, as a spread, and eaten alone, then when basil is used as a spice, you still have to take off Trumot and Masrot because of that fact that it's utilized and eaten plain in other contexts. Obviously, this is heavily influenced by the location and the way that people interact with these types of herbs and spices. But here, this Tosafot is the main source for dealing with this issue because he's trying to reconcile all the differences that we find throughout Shas. Tanrabanan, achal alei kanim, if he eats the leaves of kalamos, or reeds, patur. Ulvei gifanim, if he eats the shoots, the green shoots or buds of the vines, the grapevines, chayav. Because there, one is edible and one is considered to be like eating wood. Iluen ulvei gifanim, what are these ulvei gifanim? I'm Rabbi Yitzhak Migdala. So Rabbi Yitzhak Migdala, question here, whether that's a location where he came from or is that a profession? We discussed this in other contexts with regards to Miriam Magdala, as to what the Magdala references over here. Kol shalivlivu, anything that has sprouted in that early stage, Mirosh Hashanah Yom HaKippurim, those sprouts that came out between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, those are considered to be edible. Anything that came out before Rosh Hashanah already is hardened too much, and is not edible anymore. So they're no longer luluvei gifanim, and it's not considered to be ochel. So it has to be something that's in its initial stages of sprouting, meaning in the time period after Rosh Hashanah, before Yom HaKippurim, to consider it edible or food that you'd be chayav for on Yom HaKippurim. Rav Kana Amar, Kol Shloshim Yom. No, it's not limited to those 10 days, but rather 30 days. For the first 30 days of the sprouting, it's considered to be edible. After that point, it hardens, and it's no longer considered to be edible. Tanya Kavate de Rav Yitzchak Magdala, Achal Alei Kanim, Patur. Luluvei Gifanim, Chayav. Again, the same thing that we brought before. And now the definition of Elohein Luluvei Gifanim, Kol Shalivlibu Min Rosh Hashanah Ve'ad Yom HaKippurim. Anything that budded or sprouted between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which supports Rav Yitzchak Magdala's understanding of when it's considered to be edible, only for that short period of time, and anything beyond that would not be considered edible. Okay, let's finish up here. Shatat Sir Omurius Patur. He drinks brine or fish brine, the liquid from the fish ash is Patur. Ha chometz. You would imply from our Mishnah that if you drank vinegar plain, chayav, you would be chayav. Matnitan mani. Who's the author of our Mishnah that says when you drink chometz plain that there is any value to it? Rabbi hi. That's authored by Rabbi. Tanya Rabbi Omer chometz meshivet anefesh. When you drink vinegar, it brings the person back. It relieves the person. It brings them back to a state of yeshuv hadat. Dorosh from Gidu Bar Menashe mi beiri denarsh. Ein alocha ki Rabbi. The alocha is not like Rabbi. The Shana Nafka. So after he paskin said that the Lach is not like Rabbi, and therefore you could drink vinegar on Yom HaKippurim and not be in violation of the Inuyim of Yom Kippur. So that year, after he dashed and the Lach is not like Rabbi, Nafka Kuliyama, everybody out, Mazgu Vishatu Chalo. They took vinegar, they diluted it, and they drank it on Yom HaKippurim. Shomer of Gidil, Rav Gidil heard what the people did, Ikbad, and he was upset about it. He says, that's not what I said. Amar, ima d'amri ana d'yavad d'yavad. D'chatchilo mi'amri. First of all, I said b'diyavad. If he drank it on Yom Kippur, he would not be chayav. But I didn't say l'chatchilo, he should go ahead and drink chometz. Number one. Number two is, ima d'amri ana purta. When I said that you could drink, it's a little bit. Tuva mi'amri. I didn't say you could drink a lot of chometz on Yom Kippurim. And number three is, ima d'amri ana chai. When I said you could drink vinegar and the loch is on the grabi, that's when you drink plain vinegar. I wasn't talking about mazug mi'amri. I didn't talk about diluted vinegar. So for all those reasons, he said the people misinterpreted his psak halacha that he passed against Rabbi and said that chometz is not a problem on Yom Kippur. Number one, that's only bidiavad. We don't tell you l'chatila to drink chometz. Only if you drank chometz, you would not be chayav. Number two is we're only talking about plain vinegar and not vinegar diluted or together with anything else. Number three is it's only a small amount of vinegar, not large quantities of vinegar. Okay, we'll stop over here.